to put the last paper in perspective, there have been many efforts in this area, most of them, though, have just proved that given unlimited financial and technical resources, this job could be done. But this is one of the few efforts that have proved that it can be done on an economic basis. As the demand for health services increases, it becomes more and more apparent that we must make an effort to find the patient before he has acute symptoms, before he shows up for medical care. This is the best type of medical service. Our next paper is by Dr. Rawson, who is Vice President and Technical Director of MediData Sciences Incorporated, and the efforts of that company have been in the development of multi-test facilities.
What I have to say this morning falls into about four pieces. I'd like to start out by explaining what a multi-test facility is, in order that we'll all end up with a common background a little bit. I want to say a little bit about the medical goals of that facility. I then want to spend some time talking about data handling systems for multi-test facilities, and I shall talk about three varieties, including, of course, the interactive one, which we have developed. I want to go on then to discuss the outputs of the data handling facility, which are for human use. I think that you can tell from Dr. Kirkham's paper that the engineering of these displays is a very important part of an automated data handling system. Finally, I want to make some comments on machine-readable records. These records exist at the moment in rather small quantities throughout the country. 10 years from now, they will be present in very large quantities. If we engineer them carefully, we will discover that we have done ourselves a great deal of good over the coming years. The first slide shows a mock-up of a multi-test facility. Could I have the first slide, please? This represents no actual facility. It will do for purposes of illustration, however. I think that could be focused. The patients enter a lounge area and admissions area here. After admission to the system, to the center, they pass through a sequence of booths. Having various and sundry measurements made, they spend anywhere from 1 to 4 hours in the center, depending upon the set of procedures which are to be carried out. Some typical stations in this center include an area where medical questionnaires are filled out. You can't see it off the top here. There are booths for testing vision and hearing. This is an X-ray facility. Here's a cardiovascular booth in which the patient's electrocardiogram is taken and his blood pressure and pulse rate are measured. This was a computer area. Over here on the right is a clinical chemistry laboratory, which carries out determinations on blood and urine samples. Incidentally, I agree with Dr. Kirkham. I think the clinical chemistry laboratory ideally should have its own computer. I think you should note here that occasionally a station has been duplicated. There are 2 cardiovascular stations. There are up here 2 hearing stations and quite a number of history consoles. These have been put in to equalize the flow rate through the various stations. The idea being that you don't want long waiting lines as the patient goes through. This is one possible organization of a multi-test facility. There is another one which is currently being explored, which is one in which the patient sits still and the instrumentation is brought to him. I think it's too early to say exactly what will be discovered with these. I think they're very efficient from the point of view of the amount of time which the patient spends in the center. And occasionally, this is quite important in the use of the facility. The total cost to a patient of going through a facility, and it's, I'll say it on a per-patient basis, although his employer, for instance, may pay the fee, will run anywhere from $20 to $50, depending upon the set of procedures which are carried out and the costs of medical interpretations of, let's say, electrocardiograms and x-rays and so on. Of this cost, more than 50%, or sometimes a little less than 50%, but nevertheless a very large fraction, is labor. I think maybe we could have the lights on now for a moment. I'll want to come back to that slide later. The engineer who is attacking the problem of designing such a center finds that he can save money in the ultimate cost to the patient if he can generate either a self-administered test or a rather quick, speedy test. In either case, if he manages to eliminate the costs associated with keeping one attendant full-time in the center, he has a capital of somewhere between $20,000 and $40,000 to play with. The trade office is like that. That's a fairly large amount of equipment. The test selection for such a center involves a number of criteria. The tests must be ones which we want to perform on a rather large fraction of the population. We cannot put in esoteric tests that will be performed on only, let's say, 1% of the population. The tests must be performed by unskilled labor. One of the rules of the game is that you shouldn't have a physician sitting there watching the patients go by. He enters into the system at a later date when he evaluates the output. The tests must be short procedures. We cannot afford to put into such a center something which requires 6 hours of patient preparation. He's supposed to be through the center and gone home by the time that period of time has elapsed. Within these boundary conditions, the test selection depends on the medical goals of the center. These medical goals can be quite varied. The one which was mentioned in my introduction is that of screening, whose function is to detect unknown pathology in the population at large. Another medical goal might be to carry out an annual physical checkup. Perhaps the best known multi-test center in the country is that run by the Kaiser Permanente Medical Group in Oakland, and its function is the provision of annual physical checkups to which the health plan members are entitled. The test selection, given that function, is slightly different than it might be for screening. The tests are aimed at assuring the physician that the patient is healthy, and ultimately assuring the patient that he is healthy. It may be that the patient is willing to pay under those circumstances for a test, which is not very cost-effective from the point of view of screening in the general population. A test center could be used for hospital admissions purposes. Dr. Kirkham mentioned the use of a clinical laboratory as a screen for admitting patients. You can go beyond that and carry out a complete physical examination. The purpose in this case is to assure the medical staff of the hospital that the patient is perhaps a good surgical risk. Finally, tests can be used for industrial health purposes to assure an employer that a prospective employee can meet the demands which will be placed upon him. And this is one of the major reasons for including, let's say, vision and hearing tests. Could I have that slide back on again to perhaps let you think about this environment while I talk about data handling systems? The baseline system, which is available for comparison, is a completely manual data handling system. And it needs to be said that there are centers in the country operating with completely manual systems. The Armed Forces Entrance and Examination Stations, of which there are some 70 throughout the country, are running with only the most meager amounts of automated data handling. Fundamentally, they're still manual systems. Such systems have a large labor bill, but they do give the engineer who's designing a more automated system a baseline against which to work. They will produce fairly large numbers of transcription errors, and it's to be hoped that any automated system will minimize these. The next more complicated, or more automated system, I should say, is the card-oriented system, which is in use at Kaiser and in other places in the country. When the patient enters the admissions area down here, he's given a stack of cards, IBM cards, and as he proceeds from station to station, the data is either marked, sensed, or punched on these cards. Finally, at the discharge point, the cards are fed to the computer, which generates a summary for the use of the physician. This system produces a great many fewer errors than the totally manual system. It allows machine-aided quality control, where the machine can check for obvious transcription errors and illegal results. Finally, it allows rather simple computer programming because the machine which is generating the summary deals with one patient at a time in an offline fashion. Going on now to the online interactive system which we have developed, I might say that there's a superficial similarity with the card-oriented system in that we acquire with an online computer system the data which ultimately resides in the card stack when the patient has gone through a card-oriented center. However, the computer is also used for administrative purposes, and as Dr. Kirkham has pointed out, it tends to get into everything, and the parallel with the card-oriented system then tends to break down. We use the acquisition computer also to prepare the output. The next slide shows the data handling system which we have embedded in that center. We start out with a small process control type computer which has a scanner on it. There is then a party line communication system which goes around to all the stations in the center, talking with a piece of terminal electronics at each station. The party line communication system runs at a rate of 50 kilocycles in a bit serial mode. It gets around to each station 20 times per second, although we can adjust the scanning rate. There's a capacity of about 50 terminals in the system as the electronics is presently configured, and we've never come anywhere near that in terms of our needs. The patient enters the center and his name and other identifying information is typed in at the admissions desk on a teletype. This establishes a record in the computer's memory. Associated with this record is the number on a small plastic ID card, which can be read by photoelectric readers at each terminal. At discharge, the patient then goes from terminal to terminal, let's say to a questionnaire terminal or to a vision test terminal, and at each point he inserts, or the attendant inserts, the card into a reader, and the data from that terminal is then added to the patient's record in memory. At discharge, the patient comes back to the admissions desk and a check is made to see whether he's missed any tests and for other conditions which might indicate that further testing was necessary. Hopefully you can catch all of this before he goes home, thus avoiding another visit. Printout of the results is available on demand, either while the patient is still in the center or as soon as he leaves. We do leave the results in the computer for updating with, let's say, laboratory information, which may arrive more slowly. And when the record is complete, we provide a printed copy for the use of the physician. To give you a feel for a couple of the stations, the next slide shows the medical questionnaire console. The patient is inserting the ID card into the reader. These white buttons are next to a projected set of possible answers. The question will appear up here. If the patient wishes to select an answer, she simply depresses this button. If she wants to erase it, she depresses the blue button here. When she's satisfied with the answer, she presses the green go button to go ahead to the next question. If she wants to go back, she can press the red button to retrace through the set of questions which have been asked. The next slide shows a typical question being asked. I guess you can't see it. It says, do you have headaches? And the patient is answering no. The answer pattern which is generated here is sent to the computer, which then consults a transition matrix to find out what the next question should be. The number of the appropriate display is sent back to the terminal electronics, which then drives a random access slide projector to the appropriate point. The next question in this case is shown on the next slide. Do you have dizzy spells? And again, the patient is answering no. If she had answered yes to the first question, let's go to the next slide. Here she's shown answering yes. And in that case, the next slide shows what would have happened. She goes to a question which asks where the headaches are located, and then the questionnaire would proceed to characterize the headaches by asking how long they'd been going on and how severe they were and so on and so forth. And finally, as shown in the next slide, would go back to the question on dizzy spells. I might say that this history-taking technique was pioneered by Dr. Warner Slack at the University of Wisconsin, and although we have somewhat different hardware, we've relied very heavily on the concepts which he introduced. The next slide shows the anthropometry booth. It consists of a spirometer for measuring pulmonary function, a console which controls the operation of the terminal, and an electronic height and weight measuring apparatus. In order to measure pulmonary function, as shown in the next slide, the patient blows into the tube here, and this causes the bell to go up as the air enters it. The output of the spirometer is taken off with a pot here. It's digitized locally and sent to the computer. The computer watches as the patient prepares to blow, and when the bell starts to rise, waits for one second more, and measures the expired volume after 1 second. It then follows the curve until a peak has been reached and stores away the peak value in the patient's record. The next slide shows the patient getting weight measured. In this case, you can't see the one feature of it up here is a push button which the attendant can use to indicate to the computer that the weight is now of interest. The digitized value is available to the computer continuously. The next slide shows height being measured. Here you can see the patient, the attendant about to push the entry button to indicate that the bar has been correctly adjusted. If we wish to calibrate an instrument like this, in this case it would be with a bar. Let's say it might be 6 feet tall. The attendant places a special ID card in the reader instead of putting the patient's ID card in and simply presses the button. The computer recognizes that this is a calibration and uses the results to readjust its zero settings or scaling parameters. The next slide shows a vision testing operation, and here you will note we have not really put the system online because the patient must report what she sees to an attendant. We have, however, designed a console for the test and specifically, and we have also provided a small projection display here which tells the attendant whether the data is abnormal or illegal and thereby allows the attendant to verify abnormalities. It's of great help to the physician who reads the printout to know that any reported abnormalities have been verified. In comparing these various data handling systems, I think we can say that the labor costs as we go from the totally manual system to the interactive system go down. The data quality will gradually go up. The error rate will go down as we eliminate transcription errors. Finally, the equipment costs will go up, and the engineer must justify these equipment costs either by reducing labor costs or by providing improved data quality for which the physician and the patient are willing to pay. The failures of the systems will be somewhat different. A manual system, the failures will be mostly transcription errors. In an automated system, they will be mostly equipment failures. I think that the equipment failures have the sole virtue, if you will, that they are quite obvious. We feel that in the peripheral area, such as with a console like this, a small amount of duplication and clever design will keep the failures within inbounds and keep their impact within bounds. In terms of the central computer, I think that a small process control type computer can now be obtained with an adequate mean time between failures to serve this use. I think the online interactive system will have a gradually developing effect on instrument design. This is not very evident at the moment, but as time goes by, the equipment designer will discover that he has a computer backing him up, and he can utilize that fact in order to develop new and better instruments. Let me say just a moment about output, just a little bit about output displays here. The next slide shows the teleprinter printing out our output, which is a block of text for the medical history. The next slide shows although you can't read it, it shows tabular outputs from the vision and hearing tests and the clinical chemistry tests. I think we feel that these displays, as you could gather from Dr. Kirkham's presentation, need a great deal of engineering effort. This particular sort of a display is used by the physician in his office. It has evolved over the years as a combination of a record and a display, and we are no longer in a position where we need to keep those two things the same. Hence, we should gradually expend engineering effort on making these displays better at transmitting information to the physician. I think we will be able to save him time and to improve his technical performance if we make this effort. Finally, I'd like to make a few remarks about the matter of records. You can have the slide off. The data types which are generated by the care of an individual patient are quite varied. They consist of organized summaries of the variety you've just seen. They consist of isolated events, such as the fact that the patient broke her arm on January 12th. They consist of diagnoses, such as the patient has diabetes. They consist of comments, such as the patient looked well when I saw her this morning. I think that the retrieval goals for this sort of individual patient record are quite varied, and I don't think they're terribly predictable at the moment. We may want to retrieve the patient's record in order to help the physician in the operating room, or in the emergency room rather, to learn in 30 seconds what this patient is all about. The patient has just arrived in the ambulance. We may want to retrieve information for the patient's private physician who wants to review it prior to an annual checkup. We may want to retrieve information for the benefit of an epidemiologist who is engaged in statistical studies. I think that we can say, in looking at patient records for now an ambulatory, let's say, group practice environment instead of the hospital environment, that these records can be kept as a chronology for the patient. I know that some records are kept this way now. I think the medical profession rightly objects to them when they're in paper form. They're very hard to read. The computer has allowed us the freedom to keep records in chronologic form and to generate reports from these chronologies as we wish. I think that in order to make these records, I throw the chronology suggestion out, incidentally, merely as a suggestion. I think that in order to make these records interchangeable from one center to another, we need to put some effort in right now on the standardization of medical records. I think that the 10 years from now, we're going to have them scattered all over the country, and patients are going to move from place to place, and it will be quite important that the record gathered in New York be readable by a machine in Los Angeles and vice versa. Furthermore, I think we need to make arrangements so these records can be linked, so that records that exist in two places can be merged into one record for a given patient. Summarizing then, I think we can say that we have developed an interactive data handling system which handles the data in medical multi-test facilities. We feel that this will provide an improved quality for the data. It will provide lowered labor costs, and it is flexible in application. We feel that the output displays from these medical multi-test facilities need engineering. They need the kind of attention that has been placed on aircraft instrument panels by the engineering profession. We feel that the engineering, incidentally, that goes into such things must be incremental because the physician is used to the current display, and we can't, in one fell swoop, undo his education. Finally, we feel that the records that are generated by these facilities need careful design and standardization if they're to realize their maximum potential over the coming years. Thank you. We have a demonstration center running in our Waltham facility, which has a half a dozen terminals or so on it, and we will shortly, in the side of the next month or so, expand that to about 10 or 12. What time does the what? I still didn't get that. I'm sorry. It's a Kodak random access slide projector, which has been modified to carry 4 displays per slide. And the random access time, I think, is about 3.5 seconds if you go the long way, if you go to 180 degrees from where you are. Most of the time, it's quite fast because you're simply going 1 or 2 positions in the sequence. Well, I think I should say that ours is not a medical facility at the moment. Our demonstration unit is not a medical facility. There are a group of demonstration medical facilities that have been set up by the Public Health Service. There's one at Milwaukee, one at Tulane, one at the Brookdale Hospital in Brooklyn, and one that's just going into use at Providence, Rhode Island. These have been set up to demonstrate the concept of multiphasic screening at various points in the country and with various populations. I think Kaiser has, 3 centers in operation, and of course there are other centers with some differences that are being run privately.
Well, we've looked at various facets of the automation problem and talked about some ongoing activity in this area. Our next paper is something of a look into the future and an advanced system for handling the problem of anesthesiology. And Dr. Bartlett of the IBM Corporation will give the next paper.
As you have learned from several of the previous speakers, there's an increasing interest and activity in patient monitoring. To assess the status of a critically ill patient, a number of physiological parameters may be monitored, such as heart rate, cardiac output, temperature, several respiratory parameters, blood pressure, electrocardiogram. Patient monitoring is now quite widely employed. Even a number of the smaller hospitals now have patient monitoring systems in use. There is an increasing interest in using data processing techniques in an online fashion to improve the utilization of patient monitoring systems. There are several such computer-centered systems now in use. The Latter-day Saints Hospital at Salt Lake City has an aggressive activity. The Institute for Medical Sciences in San Francisco has an effort of several years' duration. There is one also at the University of Alabama and an ongoing one at the Mayo Clinic, where a six-month trial has just been completed. When one talks about patient monitoring and considers its applications, there is an obvious extension of patient monitoring to surgery. Indeed, this is not a new interest. Back in the early 50s, Dr. Bickford from Mayo Clinic was interested in the relationship between the electrocardiogram and the depth of ether anesthesia. And he developed a servo system which monitored the depth of ether anesthesia by analysis of some of the parameters of the electroencephalogram, and then a servo technique which altered the administration of ether to attain and then maintain the desired depth of anesthesia. Just last fall at the Fourth World Congress of Anesthesiologists in London, there were two papers which dealt with computers and anesthesia. The title of the symposium was Computer Applications in Anesthesiology. One paper, Online Computer Applications in Anesthesiology, and the second one, Servo Control of Anesthesia. Both of these papers from this country, the first from New York and the second from Stanford University in California. Not only that, but a recent Russian publication, of which I have a translation, talks about the desirability of developing these systems. So there is a growing interest in the application of online monitoring for anesthesia. The need for this stems from the critical nature of the patients, the rapidly changing condition of the patients, and finally from the shortage of skilled medical personnel. Let's look at the system and the application of online data processing. The anesthesiologist's responsibilities have traditionally fallen in the areas shown in the upper left of the slide. To produce anesthesia and muscle relaxation. These used to be done by the use of a single drug. Now, usually two drugs are administered, especially when the surgical procedure is to be prolonged. Analgesia, that is the freedom from pain, and hypnosis, to not permit the patient to remember this experience, we have grouped here under the administration of the anesthetic agent. Frequently now, a second drug is used to produce muscle relaxation. This permits prolonged anesthesia, medical procedures, without bringing the patient so deep into anesthesia. More and more, the anesthesiologist is now given the responsibility for maintaining the patient physiologically. And here, three body systems are of prime interest: the maintenance of arterial blood pressure, the maintenance of respiratory function, and the small but necessary interest, the maintenance of body temperature. In the next slide, we see these responsibilities of the anesthesiologist now across the top of the slide, and they are related now to an advanced anesthesia system concept which might be used to assist the anesthesiologist. One sees the maintenance of anesthesia and muscle relaxation and the maintenance of physiological support in the second line. The third line shows the five individual functions shown on the previous chart: maintenance of muscle relaxation, the maintenance of anesthesia level, the maintenance of blood pressure, the maintenance of pulmonary ventilation, and finally the maintenance of body temperature. This is admittedly a very busy slide, and let me orient you for just a moment. The functional analysis we have just referred to. There is a list then of sensing equipment, and you see that four colors are used there so that the five colors are used so that the systems that we are interested in are individually indicated by color here. The information from these sensors is then fed into a computer, and we have listed computer integration as consisting of inputs, the programs, and the outputs. There are here three types of outputs. Across the right-hand portion of the slide, you see displays which can be either continuous or periodic as required. Across the bottom is outputs we see as one type of output, recommendations, and as a second type of output, the eventual employment of feedback or servo control, which we show here as a sort of an autopilot function, and we show it in dotted lines. Across the bottom of the slide, we show the effector equipment. And this is a term borrowed from physiology. It's the equipment which effects the result which you want. And the same color coding indicates the relationship of the effector equipment to the sensing equipment above. Let me take for an example the maintenance of muscle relaxation as a subsystem which will illustrate the goals which are to be achieved with all of the subsystems here. A muscle relaxant is now administered more or less empirically to achieve a depth of muscle relaxation, which is sensed then by the surgeon. Either the patient is sufficiently relaxed or he is not sufficiently relaxed, and the feedback loop is usually through the surgeon to the anesthesiologist. I've got a tight belly. Can you give more muscle relaxation? There are some attempts at automating this procedure, however, and giving a better feedback. At the large naval hospital in Bethesda, for instance, they routinely hook up a nerve stimulator to the arm and periodically stimulate the nerves which cause the flexion of the smaller two fingers. And this arm is then placed in a position so that the anesthesiologist can watch the twitching of these fingers. He has learned from experience the relationship between the strength of stimulus and the twitch, the elicited twitch, the relationship of these to acceptable, to clinically acceptable levels of muscle relaxation. For an advanced anesthesia system, we would suggest making this system a little more sophisticated and making the observation, the readout of this, something which can be placed directly into the computer. We would use here a nerve stimulator and stimulate a nerve to a muscle, and then using the muscle as a bioamplifier, we would pick up the EMG or the electromyogram, simply a signal of electrical activity in that muscle. From clinical correlations with the amplitude and frequency, just really gross electrical activity of the muscle and acceptable levels of muscle relaxation, clinically acceptable levels, one could then program the computer to generate recommendations, first of all, as to whether more or less muscle relaxation should be given, and then finally, after sufficient experience and confidence in the system is gained, in a servo mode, feedback control, one could then permit the computer to control the injection of the muscle relaxant. For the maintenance of anesthesia level, the color coding shows that there are four measurements that are of interest: the electroencephalogram, the concentration of the anesthetic agent, the blood pressure, and the EKG. The color coding also shows that blood pressure and EKG are, of course, of interest in a consideration of the maintenance of the cardiovascular system. And one must then consider the relevance of these inputs to the maintenance of anesthetic level and the maintenance of blood pressure. It goes without saying here, I think, that one of the major problems in the development of a system like this is extracting from the anesthesiologist the logic sequence which he uses in arriving at his decisions as to whether or not he is going to give more or less anesthetic agent, whether he is going to accompany that anesthetic agent with a cardiovascular supportive drug, and so forth. Similar comments might be made for all of these systems. Let me mention the four levels of use in which this system might be employed. First of all, one could use it only for producing better and more meaningful displays. We would remove from the physician none of the displays that he now has. And in the event of computer failure, there would still be more displays, more information available to him than is now available. We feel that some real human factors effort need be given to the nature of these displays. I noted the comment relating the consideration of these displays in the same context as the displays in the cockpit of an aircraft. I feel that we have not yet developed really meaningful displays of this information for the a physician. A second level of use would be the use of the displays with alarm signals, and the physician could set low and high levels for any of the parameters that he wished. A third level of use would be the displays, the alarms if desired, and recommendations. And here, computer programs, logic programs developed from a continuing dialogue with the physician would generate recommendations as to desirable courses of action for the administration of muscle relaxant, anesthesia, transfusion, and the control of the complex respiratory parameters, and in addition, whether body temperature should be raised or lowered. A fourth level of use, to be employed only in an autopilot mode after sufficient confidence has been gained in the system, is the computer control of this equipment. There are indeed pioneering efforts in this regard. At Mayo Clinic, there is now used an infusion apparatus which is under direct computer control. The physician makes only the decision to begin transfusion and the rate of transfusion, and then the computer monitors several things to determine the extent and duration of the transfusion or infusion, since more than blood is used. The computer monitors arterial blood pressure, blood loss, drainage from the chest, and as well as venous blood pressure. And transfusion is continued to maintain blood pressure, to make up for fluid loss, but if the venous pressure is exceeding prescribed limits, the transfusion is suspended, because this is an untoward combination of values. One of the first impressions I think that one gets by looking at this is that there is an unwarranted requirement for instrumentation of the patient. The next slide shows the types of attachments or sensors which are now very commonly used in anesthesiology. The patients are connected to some sort of breathing circuitry, almost always by tracheal intubation. There is always some technique for measuring blood pressure, either an indwelling catheter directly in an artery or an indirect technique. Almost always the electrocardiogram is obtained, particularly on prolonged procedures. Body temperature is measured. There is a venous catheter for administering blood or drugs or fluids, and for withdrawing samples. And more frequently, urine production rate is becoming of great interest. This is because the kidney is a very sensitive barometer of the condition or the health, if you will, of the cardiovascular system, thus the interest in urine production rate. When the patient, generally and particularly the cardiovascular system, is insulted, the kidney malfunctions and may even cease to produce urine. These are the attachments which are ordinarily used. The next slide shows the attachments or sensors that would be used in the advanced anesthesia system which we have been discussing. You see that a number of the measurements that we would make are all made from the breathing circuitry: anesthetic gas concentration, tidal volume, breathing rate, partial pressure of oxygen, partial pressure of carbon dioxide, tracheal pressure, and so forth, are all made from the breathing circuitry. The items shown in blue represent the only additional attachment points to the patient, and indeed there may only be two rather than three, since very frequently body temperature is recorded. It's on the bottom, you just see body there. Body temperature is recorded from an esophageal probe. This same probe could, of course, have a pressure sensor, so that the only two additional attachment points are those necessary for obtaining the EMG and the electroencephalogram. The next slide shows the some of the subsystem components and the status of development. Most of these, you notice, are either off the shelf or are available with only minor modification. We have listed a few there which would require intermediate development. The anesthetic gas analyzer, and the gas we have looked at, by the way, here is fluothane. Any other gas could be used which could be conveniently analyzed. Fluothane is now used for perhaps 70-75% of all surgeries, and there's no real reason we understand that if there were some advantage to doing it, that it could not be used for 95% or so of all surgeries. There are gas analyzers. Fluothane absorbs very strongly in the infrared, and any of the infrared analyzers would be suitable here. One which was specialized for this purpose, which means that it would be cheaper than those would exist, would represent an intermediate development. There are techniques for automatically measuring urine production rate. Any of the techniques for measuring volume are applicable here. There is not one of them, however, that has been so widely used that we would consider it off the shelf. Transfusion apparatus, as I mentioned, has already been used in a computer control servo mode at a Mayo Clinic, but we felt that its application to a system that might be employed in many hospitals represented something of an intermediate development. Then the elements of the breathing circuitry and anesthesia machine itself, the oxygen delivery subsystem, CO2 control subsystem, the mid-position effector, just a word, what the mid-position effector is. Ordinarily, when you cease expiring, you can, by forcing, remove more air from your lungs, and obviously you can, by a forced inspiration, draw a lot more air into your lungs. That position at which you ordinarily rest at the end of an exhalation is referred to as the mid-position. When you have a patient hooked up to a hard system, that is a closed loop anesthesia machine, and the patient is paralyzed with a muscle relaxant, it's obvious that you could easily violate this position, which means that the patient might have a very large mid-position, or a more clinical term for that is functional residual capacity, or a small functional residual capacity, which would much alter the relationship between the surface of the lung and blood surface, and therefore the diffusion of gases. And then the pulmonary pump, although each one of these represents only an intermediate development in itself, perhaps the requirement for putting all of these together into an integrated and effective system might represent a more major development. One of the sensors, which we didn't have time to mention when looking at our system chart, is oncotic pressure. The oncotic pressure, oncotic means swelling, it's really the osmotic pressure of the plasma proteins. They present a very small osmotic pressure compared to the total 6.8 atmospheres osmotic pressure of the blood, but a very meaningful pressure since the capillary wall keeps the plasma proteins in, and thus this is the only osmotic pressure differential between blood and tissues. This is an important measurement when one is considering the nature of a hypotension, for instance, and whether one needs to use certain types of drugs in conjunction with fluids in supporting this. This would be a major development. There is not existing a piece of equipment that could be placed online that would frequently and quickly measure the oncotic pressure. Let's come back to just a moment. The next slide, please. To the system chart, and mention one of the goals of the use of such a system as this. What one envisions here is a central monitoring station with the central processor from which an anesthesiologist could simultaneously monitor several surgical procedures. This is not a departure from what is now done, as a matter of fact. There is an enormous shortage of anesthesiologists. It has been said that if every graduate of every medical school for the next 7 years would go into anesthesiology, that we would still not have enough anesthesiologists. And so it is that in our hospitals, anesthesia is usually supervised by an anesthesiologist, but immediately administered by a paramedical person. Thus, the anesthesiologist now, in effect, must monitor several anesthesia procedures, and he does this by circulating or rotating between the surgery rooms. He may be there on induction, and he may then return only if an emergency develops. So what we envision here is a central monitoring station, a number of remotes or surgery rooms, where there are limited displays and limited recommendations given. The central computer would be monitoring all of the patients simultaneously. The anesthesiologist would be viewing the data from one. The computer might alert him if certain conditions are going beyond limits in one of the surgery rooms, and then he could elect to call up the data from that patient on his monitor. One of the medical military services, in considering the implementation of a system like this, has concluded through committee action that the development, the implementation of such a system is feasible, desirable, and inevitable. We concur and further feel that it can be imminent by using essentially off-the-shelf system components. Thank you very much.
Thank you.